Kidventures. Where will your next trip take you? Hi, I'm Kathy from Mummy Travels.
And Ting from My Travel Monkey.
And today, we're back to school. Kind of.
Kind of. But it's the kind of lesson we all enjoy. The ones learned while you're on travels.
Yay! In today's episode, we're chatting to Tom Barber, founder of Original Travel, about the new trend for adventures or educational adventures and why family holidays aren't an escape from school after all.
So hi, Tom, and welcome to Kidventures. We're so glad you came today.
Thank you very much for having us, Ting and Gabby. Much appreciated to have the opportunity to talk all things travel and families, and obviously particularly from a learning perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. We're really excited to hear, you know, what you've got to say. But for those of our listeners who don't know about Original Travel, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your travel background?
I started Original Travel back in 2003 with two friends. One was a city boy, one was in the army, and I was a journalist. And we were all fairly dispirited with our jobs and came together and thought, you know, what is it that we really love? Travel was obviously very high on the list. And it all kicked off from there. Obviously, the last couple of years have been a little bit gritty, but we're happy to say we are flying again, quite literally, and obviously metaphorically as well. But it's all good.
It's a really interesting one, I think, this time as well, because talking about adventures, you know, educational adventures, most kids particularly, I think, would assume holidays are an escape from any kind of learning. But actually, you've got research that suggests it's a key part of family holidays. Why do you think that is?
The statistic you're referring to is actually an amazing rarity, which is 100%. So we did a survey of our clients and on social and asked what they thought about the importance of travel as part of a child's education. 100% of the listeners said that they believed it was. 25% said it was a crucial part of their child's learning, crucial specifically. I have got four kids who are now 14-year-old twins and a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old. So I'm not just getting kind of research from client databases, I'm also living it and learning from it. Children, every single time they go abroad, even, dare I say, even going to the airport, is a learning experience, often not a particularly pleasant one. But when they are in situ, it can be anything from a simple city break to a more exotic trip like a safari, but hearing foreign languages, eating foreign food, seeing how the locals dress differently from they do. These are all fascinating, interesting experiences for children and help them realise that the world is a remarkable place with many, many different facets and sides to it than the one they have at home. And I think that's absolutely crucial. It's more than just a geography lesson when they get bored. It's a life lesson.
And I think that's really what you've just touched upon is exactly that. It's you know, I think kids particularly, especially my kids, I'm speaking from experience, is they you know, they think everyone has an iPad or, you know, a Nintendo Switch or an iPhone and running water, electricity, things like that. And then when you go somewhere and it totally isn't like that, it really opens their eyes and actually adults as well. Yeah, you can really appreciate what you have here as well. Well, they don't even realise they're learning, do they, when they're away and they see different things.
I completely agree. And I think in a situation like that, you know, if you're going somewhere in the developing world, it's very important that it's not voyeuristic. Mm. And you're not wanting to make the kids feel guilty for the relative blessings that they've got back home. But I do think you're absolutely right that it the scales kind of fall away from the eyes to a certain extent, and they're like, oh, okay, I get it, you know. Not everyone, as you said, has an iPad or running water, or, and it puts things into perspective. And we've had clients come back and say that their children have been profoundly changed by one or other trip. In one holiday, they've seen a profound shift in their understanding of the world.
Yeah, I think it was interesting as well what you said about every part of the holiday potentially being a learning experience. One of the things that I love doing, which might sound a bit weird, is going to supermarkets in foreign countries, which is obviously sometimes a bit essential if we're going to eat anything. But even just wandering around there, you know, this could not be more every day. We're not talking about exotic markets, literally just, you know, your average local supermarket, and seeing what the difference is. And my daughter finds that fascinating as well. Just, you know, the very simple things of daily life, which are actually unexpectedly different, even if you're in Spain or France or Portugal or something, than they are at home.
Completely. I think it made you realize how kind of successful, sadly, the branding of a lot of big brands in the West is, that you get bombarded with these things all the time. And then when you go abroad, maybe a bit further away than somewhere like Spain, but if you're going into the States, I guess, or somewhere in Africa or Asia, it feels very alien in that situation, because all the brand names are different, the colours and, you know, everything that's been used to kind of push products on you is a different, it's different. And again, that's absolutely part of the excitement. And it actually helps people, it helps the children become a bit more observant when they're taken out of their comfort zone, essentially. And as you say, even in a kind of very domestic or normal situation, it's being walking down the street or being in the shop, it can just kind of open their eyes and make them think, oh, that's different. And then suddenly they start looking at stuff again, just with a bit more focus than they would have done before.
I think we've all got memories we'd like to forget of lockdown homeschooling. I know I have.
Yeah.
So it can be easy to think that learning as we travel is almost like an extension of that, that you're going to be, I don't know, sitting on a beach doing schoolwork or something. But it's a very different process of learning, I think. Would you agree?
100%. I think the most crucial element is that it shouldn't feel like learning. That would be a complete disaster. I know, certainly for my children and for me, if someone had pitched that to me as a child. It's stealth learning, I guess.
I like that.
Before or after. The analogy I like to make is, I like to think of our trips, our adventure trips specifically, but all our family trips, as being a bit like the travel equivalent of the brilliant Osborne pop-up books, you know, ones. My children have devoured those over the years, and I did in my distant youth. My favourite book as a boy, well, I actually was obsessed with the Know-How book of Spycraft, but the other one was How Your Body Works. And I just read that from cover to cover, you know, 10 times. And suddenly, not entirely coincidentally, I was okay at biology as a result of that. Mm. And now, if you're going on an original travel adventure, it's a similar process. You're enjoying what you're doing, but you're also learning at the same time. You basically wouldn't even realise that was the case. It's almost as if the children are learning by osmosis.
Yeah.
We had a particular kind of lockdown homeschooling moment, which was, we were meant to be going that March on this kind of mega holiday that I had been planning for about a year to Mexico. And so the children were rather despondent, as you can imagine, as was everyone at the time. And I just thought, well, okay, we're not going anytime soon. So we recreated the trip at home, and we called it the home holiday, and posted it all over Instagram. I got the children to come dress up, or the dog was dressed up in a kind of Jaguar costume, and the Lego was brought out, and Minecraft was used to kind of recreate a Mexican Mayan temple. And I just tried to kind of get their minds off the fact that we weren't actually going to Mexico. And then 2 years later, we actually did the trip itself, which was very nice.
Oh, well, tell us more about that. Was it amazing? Did the kids love it?
It was amazing. So that was Easter this year. What was very interesting, and this is a kind of very general basic point, is the holidays are going to be age appropriate for children. Mm-hmm. And the trip, when it was planned, they were 12, the twins were 12, middle one was 10, youngest one was 8. And then when we actually did it, and we kept it basically the same, we suddenly had twin teenagers instead of twin 12-year-olds. And it was quite interesting seeing that, you know, all the stuff that I had planned, and it still worked well, but I suddenly realised, okay, had we been planning that from scratch, I may have changed a few things, because suddenly you've got teens in the house, and that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Well, something we'll look forward to. So what do you think is the key to planning a great adventure? Do you have a fail-safe recipe? Do the kids get involved?
There are a few key factors to consider, but really, particularly if you're a tailor-made travel company like us, you start with a blank sheet of paper every single time. That's kind of the basis for everything. There will be elements in common if two families go to, say, Oman or Egypt. That's inevitable. But some families' children will be sporty and outdoorsy. Others will be bookworms, or you may have, a combination of the two within those families. So they are never the same, even if you're going to the same destination at the same time of year to do roughly the same sort of things in the same sort of places. Mm-hmm. So another key to planning a great adventure is we've got to ask the right questions to find out from the parents exactly how to kind of pitch this trip. And the parents actually have to have a pretty good idea of what inspires and interests their children. And that, amazingly, is not necessarily always the case. to your question about do the children get involved, yes, I think that's slightly horses to courses. That's, different families will approach that in different ways. But I think they should, personally. I think absolutely that, gets the buy-in of all parties if you discuss the potential plans. And we would always offer more than one suggestion. So if you're going to a particular place, the sort of stuff we could organise is this, this and this. And then I think it's very fun for the parents to take that home to the children and go, well, we could do this, we could do that. And then you have a round table debate, which is great fun, I think, at that point. And the other way in which we get the children involved, and this is, I think, something we've, again, my own personal experience has made me realise this, is post-holiday, I get, and I'm actually getting it live from the children when we're on holiday, but their take on every individual element of the trip, again, from, the getting there to the being there, is crucial. And my children are not backwards and going forwards. I will know about it if something was on. It's been absolutely fascinating. And obviously now I've got done all the, the toddlers, the tweens, the teens. I've seen the full gamut of emotions and interests and the like. And it has helped me refine the way we pitch our holidays, the way we put them together, knowing that certain things work and certain don't. And we're actually opening them up. We've got a new initiative coming down the line called the Guinea Kids. And that's my kids are the original Guinea Kids because they helped us learn how to be better at family holidays. But we're going to open it up to all the children who go on our trips. If they can provide us with constructive feedback,
that helps us
kind of tweak, around the margins. This is a Japanese concept called Kaizen. It's kind of constant improvement and wanting to improve by, it can be small gains. But we think the Guinea Kids and really encouraging the children to give us feedback will help on that front. One part of a fail-safe recipe is having a concierge, so having someone on the ground. We have a concierge in every country that we send people to. And a lot of the concierges, they're all locals, so they're kind of totally clued up on what's going on in their countries. And a lot of them are parents. And so they know exactly the sort of thing that will work for families and kids of all ages. So I think that's a really nice touch.
Definitely. So, can you find an adventure anywhere? You've mentioned a few different destinations, but if you had to pick a few examples that parents and kids of different ages would love, where would you head off for on an adventure?
So I'm very careful to walk the walk as well. I still want to talk on stuff like this. And I have taken my children on many of these things. So to answer the first part of that, you can absolutely have an adventure anywhere. And more often than not, we're not actually saying, here's the quotation and the itinerary for your adventure. It's more of a concept than a kind of stamp that this trip specifically is an adventure, because pretty much every trip tends to be an adventure in the end. But there are certain places that nail it even more than others. And you've got slightly younger children, the whole concept that everyone pitches themselves as family friendly. A lot of places significantly are not family friendly. I'm talking hotels and whatever. But somewhere for an adventure, I think even your basic bucket and spade trip can be an adventure because of what I was saying earlier. New foods, new languages, and plus sun, sand, sea, swimming, that's a total win. After that, I would definitely drop in a city break once they're kind of seven, eight, particularly if they've got any sort of interest in history or art or whatever it is, and Rome and Paris from a UK perspective.
Yeah.
Have to be the classics. We've done both those with our children, and they adored it and we adored it, and they are total winners. I think it does slightly help that I consider myself a bit of a kind of amateur historian, and my wife is works in the art world, so we can kind of nudge the children in the direction of amazing galleries or art museums, or I can give a very, very basic background of what we're looking at, that sort of thing. So that does help. But if you're standing in the Forum in Rome and you can give some sort of context to it, I think that helps them appreciate it much more. Or if you're standing in front of the Monet water lilies in the Musée de l'Orangerie, apologies for my terrible French accent, in Paris, and you can actually explain why Impressionism is such an important movement in art, then, just totally enhances the experience.
Absolutely, because you can look at it in a book, can't you? You can look at pictures, but nothing compares to actually being there in person.
And actually, so that those are two examples where we can impart a bit of knowledge. But in both Paris and Rome, we also got a guide, not for the whole time. You didn't want to be kind of in each other's pockets the whole time, but getting a guide for slightly more complicated bits or where some real specialist knowledge will kind of just take the whole experience to the next level. That is crucial. And not just any guide either. It needs to be a guide to get children. And I think that's really important. So we took the children around the Vatican, which potentially high risk, quite dry, some of it.
And busy.
Much so. And if we'd done that with a kind of standard Vatican guide, they would have been kind of just rolling their eyes and grinding their teeth from minute one. So we specifically find and work with guides who are brilliant with kids. And she was absolutely, she called Julia, and she was absolutely amazing at knowing what would spike their interest and how to pitch particular concepts. Because learning about endless ancient popes or whatever is not particularly fun. But she was absolutely amazing at getting them really kind of fired up and interested in the whole thing. So that, I think that is a completely crucial element, a good guide, but specifically a family-friendly or a guide who understands families.
Sounds like you could be a guide with your maybe.
amateur, an emphasis on the amateur. So I'll leave it to the pros in normal circumstances. If that's the kind of first toe in the water of an adventure, then I think after that, if they're a little bit older, maybe kind of dip your toe somewhere mid-haul, so somewhere that's not a kind of city break or long haul, somewhere like Oman or Egypt or Morocco, somewhere like Marrakesh. Still, every time I go to Marrakesh, which is quite a lot, you land there, and it is remarkable. You're 3 hours, whatever it is, from London, and it's an extraordinarily exotic place, and just kind of plonking kids into that environment is amazing. Showing them Jemaa el-Fanar Square at night and getting them sitting in one of those wonderful open air stalls, eating local delicacies, and then watching soothsayers or magicians or acrobats or storytellers. And it's maybe not as authentic as it was 10, 20 years ago, but they are still there entertaining the locals as well as the tourists. It's legit still. And that's just blows children away most of the time. They're just kind of like, oh, wow. It feels like they kind of dropped into a movie scene, basically. After that, that's kind of when you're maybe 8, 9, 10, you can start thinking about safaris, which is, that's a pretty big leap of faith, I think, at that point. Although most children love wildlife, I guess. You've got to hope that if you take them somewhere with big bees, they will love it. That was another very special trip we did, was to South Africa. And we ended up in Madikwe, which is this wonderful place that's malaria-free. So obviously you don't have to try and force feed malaria tablets to children, which are, as you know, revolting at the best times, even for grown-ups. So then we learned to ride. None of us were appalling on a horse, and by the end of it, all of us were kind of admittedly, kind of plodding along. But this reserve has no predators. So, you know, you're completely safe, but you still see, there were some rhinos there, we saw some giraffes. It was absolutely amazing. But then the guide was also showing us, you know, how to read the bush, essentially. So looking for spore, looking for paw prints, looking for any sort of evidence of animals, you know, that we may have been completely oblivious to. And it was just fabulous. If you go somewhere like Kenya or Tanzania, then you have the whole Maasai or Samburu culture as well, which is another whole learning and appreciation angle. The last one I would probably consider, the ultimate one for teens, for me, and we haven't done this yet, obviously, is Japan, which is, that is a big ticket item. You know, you need to go there for a long time because it's pretty gritty, but, and it's not cheap, but it is amazing, the sort of stuff, whatever your children are interested in, there's something, well, several things that will absolutely float their boats, I suspect. So there's a whole kind of art angle with anime and manga, and they can learn how to draw cartoons. They can learn about the basics of karate. There's this amazing open air film studio outside Kyoto, where they film all these kind of old fashioned TV dramas set in the kind of age of the samurai or medieval times. And the children can dress up as ninjas or samurai.
My boys love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. And then, you know, and then lovely little kind of detailed things like learning the art of origami and things. So that for me is, that's the kind of the ultimate one. I've talked endlessly there, so.
I was just laughing because, like you were saying, it's like the ultimate one, and in my head, I was thinking, yeah, the ultimate one for me as well. My kids have always wanted to go to Japan. They're hugely into Pokemon as well, so it's already
yeah. There's another one, Hello Kitty. I mean, it's.
And what do you think are the trends that you're seeing for adventures this year, and maybe for 2023 as well?
Well, I think this concept of adventures and encouraging your children to learn on holiday, again, be it subtly, by stealth, whatever, I think that's here to stay. I really do. I think, as we've said, you know, it teaches your children a better perspective and understanding of the world, makes them appreciate home again. There can't be any downside to that. This derogatory term about kind of pushy parents and things, that will always exist, and I don't, obviously, I have no problem with that. I think it's very good that people want their children to do well. But just to give it a kind of slightly more subtle spin, that they're also teaching their children about the world, about respect for other cultures, about that sort of thing. You know, there's no downside to that. When we're talking adventures, we're not necessarily talking just learning about cultures as well. We're actually talking about learning skills. So something like learning to dive. So Paddy, who are the kind of general overarching body for diving, they have something called the Bubble Maker course, and you can do that from as young as age 10. That doesn't mean you're going to be, you know, kind of suddenly off diving to 18 meters on coral reefs all over the place, but you're in a pool with an instructor, you're learning the basic concepts and learning that it's not absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
And that can absolutely spark a child's imagination, and you know, there's something like, oh, now I get it, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, and suddenly you kind of, you've spawned a future marine biologist. So that sort of adventure in terms of learning a new skill, I think is definitely something that people are going to be very keen on for the next year or so. We are very keen that we can just put some sort of conservation angle in front of the children, and ironically it's quite often the parents who are learning more about this, because the children are, you know, they bought into this long ago. They understand the critical situation the planet's in. And actually, but if you can do something as glorious and luxurious as lying on a beach in a beautiful island in the Maldives, but quite a few of these hotel islands have amazing conservation programs. So you can go and learn about reef cleaning, or you can snorkel and do a kind of fish count, all helping that little project find out more about the situation, whether populations are going up or down, and kind of reinforcing their understanding that conservation is incredibly important. And then they will go and sit there at lunch and tell their parents what they did that morning, and the parents are like, oh, okay, this is really important stuff, and hopefully it will kind of push them into more conscious behavior as well.
Yeah, I got to say, having sat and listened to all the ideas that you've listed, I basically now want to go off immediately and do all of them.
Yeah, me too.
Ideally back to back.
I'm delighted to hear that from any reasons.
What would you say to people who, obviously, so many people have had the most horrendous, stressful couple of years? What would you say to all the people who are thinking, you know what, I just want to go and lie in the sun. I don't want to do anything else. That's what my holiday is. You know, I don't want to be trekking around doing this, putting, you know, I just want to lie still with a book and a drink.
I would say I salute you, because I think everyone should do that once in a while. You know, it's life is about mixing it up and variety. And there is nothing wrong at all with lying on a beach in the sun, you know, by lapping waves. That is a heavenly way to spend time, particularly for children. So I don't think we should be denying our children or ourselves that. At the same time, you know, then go on a city break, then go on a safari, then go on an action-packed adventure or skiing or whatever it is. But even on that, and I slightly touched on it earlier, even on that, again, industry term, kind of fly and flop holiday, you're learning, you're listening to languages, you're learning about new food, you're just getting out of your comfort zone as a child and experiencing things. And then I'm going to make a kind of slightly odd analogy here. I'm obsessed with football. And as a child growing up, if my team, Nottingham Forest or whoever, were playing Steaua Bucharest, I'd be like, where the hell's that?
Yeah.
And then you look on the map and you're like, okay, Bucharest, that's right. And then it's just helping you pick up information. So you would be doing exactly the same thing if you're lying on the beach in wherever it is, France or Italy or the Middle East or where you're just by being there, you are then conscious of where that place is on the map, hopefully. And that's, you know, it's all helping. It's all part of the learning process. We also provide every child who goes on one of our trips, they get a little kind of information pack with a fun map of the world, but specifically for that destination, there's a whole bunch of fun facts, and then there's a quiz that, you know, there's no kind of, not necessarily a prize for it, but to do on, let's say, the week that you are away in Oman, here's a bunch of questions. You know, what's the ruler of Oman called? What's the currency? Just stuff that you can then, it encourages the children to just go and have a conversation with the waiter in the restaurant or whatever it is. You know, learn how to say hello in Arabic or whatever it is. And these are just nice little kind of nudges, I guess. It's like that self-learning I was talking about. It nudges children into being curious, and most children are unbelievably curious.
I think that's so important, just sparking that curiosity and getting them to engage.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, who knows? Not all children are especially curious, or they just want to kind of down tools and have a nice time. But, you know, parents will know that and find that out as their children grow up. And it's, again, you've got to cater to the way your children are, what sparks them. And a lot of children, you know, particularly when they're at kind of stressful exam age or whatever it is, back to the whole kind of fly and flop, that might be exactly what they need.
Yeah, yeah. And what's on your travel wish list? Where are you going this year and next?
Well, I have, so I announced at the end of the Mexico trip that the next two trips that I wanted us to do, because I feel like they're in the kind of sweet spot in their ages, are a California road trip and then a road trip through the Rockies in Canada down to Vancouver and Vancouver Island to see whales and bears. Oh. And they all looked at me and went, can the next one just be a bit up with me? I'm like, that's fine by me. It's going to save me an absolute fortune. So, and then, yeah, so this summer we're doing a bit of UK stuff, and then we are having 1 week in Italy because my mum, to her eternal credit, has a house out there near a place called Lucca, which is this beautiful city in Tuscany with an entirely intact medieval wall, which must be 3 miles in total. And it's huge. Its wall is 20 metres thick and has a road that goes around it, and this beautiful tree-lined road. And you rent bikes and you bicycle around the walls of Lucca. And there's a couple of gelaterias. We pick up delicious ice cream and a lovely little restaurant that we know where we have lunch en route, and that's just heaven. And that is an amazing, so we call them 3G holidays, so 3-generational. So mum, parents and grandchildren, and that's just complete heaven. You know, it's not fancy, it's not, doesn't cross the earth, it's not the other side of the planet, it doesn't involve any kind of particular equipment, it's just bicycling essentially, but in a beautiful location with family. And I genuinely, well, we do it every year, and the children adore it, mum adores it, I adore it, it's very special.
And sometimes those are the holidays that actually stand out in memories most, those special moments with family and eating amazing food and just lovely sunshines and long walks and things like that. Yeah, I definitely get that. So I understand when you say it's nice to mix it up with everything if you can.
Well, exactly. There's definitely an element of that. You know, some of the trips I've talked about are not cheap, and you know, I totally get that. And we're in a situation at the moment where everyone's kind of watching the pennies a bit. So it's important to be able to offer stuff closer to home, or a short break, or whatever it is, you know, just to kind of make sure that people can experience things with their families and not have to go halfway around the planet to get to them.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tom, for joining us today. It's been really interesting to hear about adventures, what the company's looking to do in the future. It's all very exciting.
Thank you for the opportunity. And yeah, if you ever want any advice, I don't think you need it, either of you, but on what life's like traveling with teens, then I'm now able to give that advice.
Well, we're looking ahead. There are always lessons to learn, evidently. I'd be very happy to do it in Japan. So, you know, fingers crossed that will be.
Yeah, I'll do it in Kenya if you need any research.
That works.
Do, 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 do. See you again soon for the next kidventure. Do, 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 do.